At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Let's roll. This is Sports Rage. I am Gabe Morenci, the pips, the players, the hustlers, the podcasters, the people that bust them, and everybody else in between. Let's do this thing as we wrap up what turned out to be an absolutely crazy, wild weekend of action across the board. And pretty much it seems like this was like this last week in the National Football League as well, in which you look at this, you look at the schedule and you look at the games that are being played and you think, my God, what a terrible slate of games. And just like really, really bad matchups. But, you know, these bad matchups turn out to be very entertaining games. And, of course, Major League Baseball, we've got a game 7. The Dodgers await the winner of the Seattle Mariners and the Toronto Blue Jays as Toronto's on the verge of returning to the World Series for the first time since 1993. And or Seattle makes it to the World Series for the first time ever in franchise history. The only baseball team never to make it to the World Series in Major League Baseball. Hard to believe, the Seattle Mariners. And they're knocking on the door right now. We got a doubleheader in the National Football League. The NBA season is ready to tip off in a little more than 24 hours. The NBA is back. CFL, final week of regular season play. This week, so the playoffs are 2 weeks away in the CFL, and the MLS playoffs start this week. So there's a hell of a lot of stuff going on. We got Mo Khan in the house. We got the Ranger Redhead, Cam Stewart in the house. Mo, good to see you. We got a very big week of action coming up this week.
A very big weekend of action here, guys, but also a very happy Gator fan because the Gators go off Billy Napier. And all likely will hire Jed Fish to be the next head coach and be the same predicament next year when we talk about the Gators being 4-4 at this point in the year.
Well, one thing about the Florida Gators and all these teams that decide to fire their coach, you better get it right, right? And it seems like a lot of these teams, they don't really have anybody that is lined up or you know, they don't really have a plan. And then they find themselves in the same situation. Yeah, listen, Billy Napier, it was inevitable. It had to happen. And he is replaceable, but they've got to get this right. And it's sort of like draft picks, guys, right? Like people, the public, they always pick on the player. A kid will get drafted too high in a draft, and then he won't be as good as people want him to be. And the kid will get mocked, and the kid will get ripped, as opposed to the organization who actually took the player that high. And Mo, for me right now, it's like with the Florida Gators, you can't even blame the coaches anymore. It's the administration that, you know, just continuously gets this wrong over and over again.
Yeah, you're right. It definitely is. But I'll ask you guys, we talked about this 3 weeks ago, our passionate debate for Arkansas. Better drop today. Yeah, Arkansas or Florida?
The Arkansas debate. That was fun.
Less pressure at Arkansas. I'll
yeah, exactly,
yeah,
guys.
For sure.
Yes.
For sure.
Yes.
There's less pressure in Arkansas. So as far as Florida is concerned, it is a big-time job. The facilities aren't what they used to be compared to the modern programs, and I think they've fallen behind a little bit. But they still have money, and it's still a prestigious job. You'll be a hero if you're able to win there. And there should be a lot of candidates. There's a lot of names being thrown out there right now. I think a name that would make Gator Nation pretty comfortable is Urban Meyer. Then if Urban Meyer would decide to come back and take the program over. Now, I don't think that's going to happen,
no.
But I know that there's a lot of people that want to see that happen.
Yeah, you have better odds of John Gruden being the coach before Urban comes back and coaching Gainesville. He left them in a bad situation in a toxic environment. Don't think they want to go through that again moving forward.
I don't think they do either. Just due to all the controversy that they don't want to go through this. James Franklin was a name that was already being bandied about even before Napier was let go. But listen, I think Franklin's a really good coach, but it's going to be a hard sell to Gator fans to say, listen, we're hiring a guy that just got fired because he didn't win the big game. But at the same point in time, if you're Florida, Mo, I mean, if you could win 10 games a year and not win the championship, I still think that would be a better spot to be in. But I don't think James Franklin will be the next coach of Florida. Do you?
No, no. Like I said, I think Jed Fish is more likely than any of these candidates right now. That's the apathy that a lot of Gator fans have in the mindset of how Scott Strickland, the AD, works. He aims big, but he ends up getting like a bargain discount at like Zeller's for the next head coach.
Guys, I got to say this too, Gabe, and you brought up a point, and this is really important. How many great coaches are there out there now? Better than Franklin, better than everybody. That's the whole thing. You're firing guys all over the board. It's like, okay, who's next? Tell me who's better. Like, do you go to a guy who's had great success at a smaller program, or you take a recycled guy that's been out of the business? It's like a lot of these schools pull the trigger, and I get it. You guys should have lost to Mississippi State, but I'm going to tell you, there, Gabe, how many coaches are great? How many coaches are better than Franklin out there? That's the whole thing.
Well, I wouldn't have fired Franklin if I was Penn State. I understand why they did. Yet the problem is, if you give a chance, they gave a chance. Napier was a small school guy. Mm-hmm. Right. And this is the problem. I remember, Mo, when Napier got hired, I was thinking, you know, I was like, how come LSU's not interested in Napier? Right. Napier had the high school connections there more than Florida. Like, he was a great recruiter. He was winning football games in the state of Louisiana. And I was like, how come? And people close to LSU told me they don't want to hire like some sort of small school coach. They don't think that he'll be able to handle it. Yeah, he's a good coach, but he'll be in over his head. That you need somebody that can handle the administrative recruiting, that it's a different animal. Like, when you're a coach of one of these other teams, you're just a football coach for the most part, and you're in control of everything, right? Because it's like, you know, all right, I'm the head coach of Monroe or La Tech, and I'm in charge of everything. You're really not at LSU or Florida. Right. You've got very powerful donors, powerful boosters. The administration is very involved at these major schools. There's an immense amount of pressure. If you lose a couple of games, there's always power struggles behind the scenes. So there's a lot of stuff you got to deal with, sort of like politics. And a lot of these coaches that haven't dealt with it before don't do it very well. But there's going to be all the big names. You know, they're going to try to go after Dan Lanning. Everybody always does. It's all the same names that, like, people, will they want to leave the school? Kenny Dillingham's a good example, Mo. Like, Kenny Dillingham is really, really respected. He's not going to be at Arizona State forever unless they pay him a ton of money.
And right? They're cheap, I mean, right now.
Yeah, So, like, pretty much anywhere Dillingham goes, it is an upgrade. It is a move up. Like, all these coaches all try to climb the ladder, and you can't deny it. Florida's a bigger job than Arizona State is. But so Dillingham will be a name that's thrown out there. Dan Lanning said no to Alabama, so he ain't going to say yes to Florida, right? No. Dan Lanning's got a good thing going with the Ducks. He's happy. He might coach in the SEC down the road. A name I'll throw out there that I think is one of these guys that, as Cam mentioned, who's a coach, like, besides a recycled guy that could be really good, and a lot of these teams in the SEC do want him, is Rhett Lashley of SMU, Mo.
He's got Florida connections, right? He coached the University of Miami. SMU's doing very well, right, in the ACC, and he's an up-and-coming guy.
He played at Arkansas.
That's right.
He played football at Arkansas.
It all comes back to Arkansas, Gabe.
Yeah, so, like, he's at the front of the line for Arkansas if he leaves SMU. But the thing is, guys, SMU, not the most glamorous job.
But good.
But the thing is, SMU are rich. So while it's not as, like, you know, it's definitely not as big as some of these other programs are, they have money, SMU. I mean, SMU had so much money that they bought their way into the Big 12 and told the Big 12, you don't even have to pay us for 7 years. Right? Like, SMU is not getting paid. Like, that's pretty crazy. Like, a lot of schools would never accept that, right? Yeah, we're going to go to a conference, but we're not going to get paid for 7 years. The Big 12 basically told them, we're jammed up. We don't even really need you or want you. So if you really want to do this, or the ACC, excuse me, if you really want to do this, then, you know, you're not going to get paid. So they have so much money, they don't care. So they have enough money that they could kind of keep Lashley and throw big money at him. But there'll be other big time programs, right, that are going to be looking for coaches. And here's another guy too, Drinkwitz in Missouri. Except I think Missouri have a good thing going, guys, and I don't think the administration will bust it up. Missouri have money. They're renovating their stadium. They've got cash. He's a really good coach, and they might make the playoffs this year. So I don't see Drinkwitz leaving Mo either.
Good call, Gabe, by Missouri, too, going into Auburn and winning that game. And they got down early. That was a very impressive win for playing all those home games and then having to go on the road and getting it done in the clutch. Very impressive.
Yeah, Missouri's schedule is, you know, I thought of how easy it was, and that's why I bet on them. I'm one win away from, so we're at six now. We're 6-1. We had over 6.5 wins for Missouri. But I thought their schedule was so favorable. Yet there's teams. It's why you can't ever really predict, like, strength of schedule before the year starts, because there's teams that are going to be really good. I mean, that, like, a good example is now Missouri go to Vanderbilt, Kim.
Oh, God.
That's a harder game than Auburn is.
Oh, like, so
I thought before, I was like, wow, they get through the Auburn game, it'll be all right. But it's like, no, Vanderbilt are really – like, if you look at their schedule now, guys, Missouri at Vanderbilt, then they host Texas A&M.
They got to beat Mississippi State, Gabe. That's your seven.
Mississippi State at Missouri. Missouri at Oklahoma.
It's tough.
And then Missouri at Arkansas.
Rival game.
So they end, like, this is – they've got, like, a really tough schedule. Like, if they can lose one more game out of this, they'll make the playoffs. Like, if they go 10-2 with this schedule here at the back end of this, they're going to make the playoffs. But if they lose three, they won't be. There's going to be a lot of teams, good teams with two losses this year. So, yeah, wildness in college football. Napier finally out. Penn State's looking for a coach. So, big-time programs are starting to shake things up. And Indiana's the second-ranked team in the country right now. Ohio State continues to dominate. Michigan are, like, ranked 25th, despite only having two losses. And you know what's funny with Michigan, guys, because Michigan can – all Michigan has to do is just basically win out, right? It doesn't matter they're ranked 25th right now. They got to win out, get to the Ohio State game, and then just hope for whatever reason Ohio State suck again against Michigan, which eventually you figure they're not. Man, Julian Sain's a good quarterback.
He is.
Like, if you see the passes that he makes, he doesn't just throw to open guys. He threw a pass, Mo, into the end zone the other day. The receiver was like 15 yards away from where he threw the ball when he threw it. Yeah, that's like serious stuff. I'm amazed people don't talk about him more than they do. I don't know why they don't, actually.
He doesn't have that big win. I mean, you might say Illinois is a big win, right? But, like, you always want that signature win that puts in the Heisman race.
Yeah, but other people – yeah, and also, too, he doesn't put massive numbers up. That's another thing, too.
No, he was slow out of the gates. Remember, he threw, like – I think he passed, like, 150 against Texas, and people were like, well, he's a managing quarterback right now, game manager. Wait till his second
people
year
are
in
idiots.
System.
That was his first game that he started in his career. Exactly. He's a manager. It's his first game.
I was Arch Manning in his games too. Like, people, like, are out there, like, you don't really see the picture. Gabe, you're right. I watch this guy throw balls into tight windows all the time. I get it. Like, it's just Ohio State too. And the whole thing is, you know, like, they're relentless. Like, their whole goal with second and third stringers out there, like, don't let these Wisconsin get 1 point. They didn't. That's the whole thing. Like, it's just no, I think he's a great quarterback as well. The guy's very, very solid.
The thing is, Will Howard was kind of a game manager. Right, who was their quarterback last year and now on the Steelers. Like, he's okay, but he was kind of that game manager. The problem is, like, Julian Sain's like a star, and it's kind of scary. Ohio State haven't had a star QB in a while, and now, like, you could tell, you know, I'm just thinking how long he'll be there. He's not that big, so we'll see what the NFL, you know, if the NFL falls in love with him or not. But from a collegiate standpoint, he's going to be a bitch to deal with, Sain. Like, last year, I kind of knew we can get to Howard. If we can stop the run game, let's make Howard beat us. Now, and the thing is, Michigan's pass defense isn't that good. It's kind of average for Michigan standards right now. So I am very concerned about that game, that Ohio State would be able to throw the ball all day long on the Michigan Wolverines. But as I stated, you know, I didn't think Michigan were going to win the championship this year. And I kind of thought it would be a surprise if we made the playoffs. Even I had Michigan slated for a 9-3 record, and where we're at 2 right now, the schedule is very manageable until Ohio State. So I think we could probably end up 9-3, because you got to figure one of these years, like, I think Julian Sain will be the difference and not let Ohio State choke this time against Michigan. But National Football League action. I got to tell you, Mo, I never in a million years thought that we would be at this time of the year right now in the National Football League, and the Indianapolis Colts would be the one seed in the AFC.
It's like the old 1999 AFC when it was them, the Steelers and all that. But, guys, we spoke about this a month ago, right? I brought the point for Indianapolis' schedule where, if you recall, I said, look, they have to go through that gauntlet of teams that they have coming up here. And they did fairly well. Like, you think about it, that they went to L.A. twice in the last couple weeks here and put up a good fight against the Rams, lost out by 7. They smashed the Raiders, took out the Cardinals by 4, beat the Chargers. I mean, that's quality wins. That's a quality win over the Chargers because they could very well play L.A. again in the playoffs if they get in.
The Chargers aren't. But, you know, the Chargers are okay. That's what I was going to say about the Colts. They haven't beaten anybody. They beat the Miami Dolphins. Okay, you know what? We'll give them the Denver win in week 2.
Yeah.
That Denver really should have won. They made the, you know what I mean, that they missed the field goal and they gave them the free pass because only touched the center. So they dodged that bullet. They beat Tennessee. They lost to the Rams. The Raiders are terrible. The Cardinals, whatever. All right, you beat the Chargers. We'll find out. Like, listen, I'm going to give them credit, Indy, but there is a little run where the schedule gets trickier at the end of the season.
After the bye week.
Yeah, like they've got the Pittsburgh, you know, you got Tennessee coming up, and, you know, at Pittsburgh versus Atlanta, at Kansas City, Houston, Jacksonville, at Seattle versus San Francisco versus Jacksonville again. So schedule gets trickier for the Colts, but I'll give them credit. I mean, they're winning the games, Mo. I'm not taking anything away from them, but they really haven't played anybody.
No, but there is some quality to it. But then look at their formula right now. Run the ball with Jonathan Taylor, who's done well this year. He's had a renaissance this season, right, with all the TDs he scored. And their defense isn't the best, but it's in the middle of the pack right now. But
I don't know, Mo. It's getting a hell of a lot better. Their front four are killers. I watched that game. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they got so much penetration. Albeit the Chargers line is banged up, but Herbert on every single play, he's running for his life. And the thing is, like, I got to be honest with you, Gabe, you could only play who's on the schedule. These guys look like they didn't just win games. And if not for one bonehead mistake against the Rams, where a guy was going in for an automatic touchdown and dropped the ball and they had a crazy penalty, they'd be undefeated. I think we got to give these guys credit. They limit the mistakes and they know what their strengths are. Pittman's underrated. And I think their whole team, like their defense, is actually very, very solid when it comes to stopping the run and getting penetration.
I can't argue. The recipe has been there. Mm-hmm. They are playing really, really good football, and they are a good football team. It's just, you know, the schedule will get trickier for them, and the market is not buying into them mm-hmm. in the sense that if you look at the Super Bowl, you know what? They are 11-1, which is like crazy low compared to what they were. But, you know, the Chiefs are 5-1 right now. The Bills are still 7-1, despite all the Bills' flaws. The Packers are plus 750. The Lions are 8-1 right now. The Eagles are 10-1. Rams 11-1. Colts 11-1. Buccaneers 18-1. Broncos 20-1. Speaking of the Buccaneers, they're in action tonight. Another football team that doesn't get the credit that they deserve. It's been a couple of years that Tampa have been a very difficult out and difficult team to deal with in the playoffs. Now, though, they're good, where they could be like a team to beat in the playoffs. The problem for Tampa Bay is they're always besieged by injuries. They do have Mike Evans coming back, and I'm seeing now that Buka is a game-time decision. He went from being out to questionable till they're saying maybe he's going to play. I hope that he does. Mo, what do you think of the Lions in the Buccaneer game tonight?
Well, the Lions are what, 52.5, right now for points? I think it's going to be on the over, guys. I really do. I think both these teams, being where this game is being played at, they're going to put up some big-time numbers. Remember, Tampa's played Detroit really tough the last couple of times they've gone up against each other. I believe Tampa beat Detroit in the regular season. It was the last year, 2 years ago. But this game means more for Detroit because
No Bucky Irving, too. So you got no Bucky Irving. Like, the injuries are really mounting up for Tampa.
Sure, and I think for Detroit, they need this win, guys. Like, Tampa's got a bit of runway to work with in their division, but Detroit right now, if the playoffs were to start, they're the 7th seed right now. If they were to lose, they fall into a pile of the Bears, Panthers, and Cowboys all chasing the last playoff spot right now. So I think for the Lions, this is more on them because, remember, they skunked that game against the Chiefs last week, didn't play well. Now here's a chance to redeem themselves back on primetime, and this being where it's at, I think they have a good chance to do so. But I think for the Lions, they have more to lose than to gain, because what could happen if they were to be a 3-loss team at this point in the regular season?
I would be all over the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in this game, but they do have a ton of injuries. But the thing is, The spread is 6 points right now, which is absolutely insane that you're getting 6 points. Yeah, they're beat up, but the Buccaneers just don't lose by a margin. If they lose close games. Total's 53. Cam, what's your pick for the Buccaneers and the Lions?
I like the Lions and very close to the number. I think they cover. I think they win by a touchdown. To your guys' point, Tampa Bay is really, really banged up in all areas. And I think you got to be very careful at Gabuka. He's a special player. He's a special receiver. And if he has any type of injury, like, you're going to need this guy down the line. So don't screw around. Like, you're so much better than the other teams in your division. Mo, I'm with you on this one. I think it's huge for the Lions after losing to the Chiefs in that fashion. I think they go in there and get it done. But you're right, guys. Tampa Bay historically very, very tough against the Lions. I just think the Lions win and cover tonight. Agree, Mo, points in this game as well, like 35-27 type of game.
The total is up to 53 right now. So there is a doubleheader. There's a doubleheader this evening. And we've got the Houston Texans and the Seattle Seahawks in action in the nightcap tonight. One thing with the National Football League is that, man, there's been a lot of doubleheaders this year, and I guess they're not doing the double headers anymore, so they're racking them up this year. So there's been a lot of double headers this year, but they always start at different times. Like, so there's no consistency to them. Like, they're either against each other, they're an hour apart, right? They're always mixing up the start times. And tonight we sort of have a more traditional one with a 7 o'clock Buccaneer Lion kickoff. So we've got an early kickoff on the East Coast, and then sort of a standard 10 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Pacific on the West Coast. Cam, your Seattle Seahawks, 3-point favorites against the visiting Houston Texans. What's your pick?
Huge night for Seattle sports fans. Mm-hmm. All of them are playing tonight. This is crazy, right? You got the Mariners and Jays at 8 o'clock Eastern. This game at 10. Listen, Gabe, I think it's important and vital that Seattle finally, you know, wins a significant game at home. Beating the Saints is one thing, and they murdered them. But other than that, we talk about their 9-game win streak on the road. Everything has flipped from the Seahawks' 12th man to being road warriors. But this is a spot, I think, where the defense can get to Houston. And I don't think Houston has enough weapons to keep up with Seattle. I think Seattle's going to win this game in a lower scoring affair. This is game, I think, goes under. Maybe Seahawks by, like, that number is good. I think they win this game by, like, 3 or 4, Gabe.
This is a big game for both teams, Mo. I mean, the season's cruising along here right now. These games all count, and
yeah,
we're seeing teams are going to start to put together some wins as the season goes on. So especially if you are look, you're in a division with Jacksonville and you're in a division with the Indianapolis Colts. You've already lost contact basically with the Colts if you're the Texans. So you're playing for a wild card right now. And if you're Seattle, it's like, yeah, we're having a nice year. We're 4-2. The Rams are 5-2. And the Niners, despite all their injuries, are 5-2. So this is like, you know, it's kind of a must-win game for both teams tonight.
Yeah, I think more must-win for Seattle because, again, you think about who they lost to this year. They can afford to lose a non-conference opponent right now. And I agree with Cam on this whole point that I think you take the under. I think the over-under at 41.5, I think you take the under in that. I think the final score will be Seattle like 21-17 at that point. I just think that the Texans right now, their biggest concern is their O-line. They can't protect C.J. Stroud. What does Seattle do fairly well now? Their defense has been getting to the quarterback more often than not here. I think that's the reason why Seattle wins this game and wins by maybe 2-3 points in the end.
One thing with the Seattle Seahawks, they have struggled at home over the years for whatever reason, right? And it's ironic because they were known for the 12th man so much and having such a distinct home field advantage, but they haven't under McDonald. And in fact, they're 4-12 against the spread with McDonald on their home field. Now, they did light up the New Orleans Saints. They handled their business earlier this year, but they are looking for, you know, they're 4-2 on the season. They're 3-0 on the road, which is, you know, bizarro world. So Seattle 3-0 on the road. They're only 1-2 at home. I think Seattle get it done tonight on their home field. I think that they're so conscious about playing well on their home field. And also, their defense is good. Like, you know, Sam Darnold's good. They're a good football team. Like, they're pretty much – they don't really have any weaknesses right now, the Seattle Seahawks. And I think defensively they will shut down Houston, as Mo was talking about. Liking the game to the under now. It's a super low total. But I think Darnold will – you know, Seattle will do enough and win the game by 7 or so. I don't know how entertaining – you know, 21-7, 21-10. You said 21-17. Type of football game. So, yeah, we got a doubleheader tonight, 7 o'clock and 10 o'clock. Now, The Kraken also play tonight, Cam. So big night in Seattle. The Seattle Kraken are in action at the same time.
Yeah, they just finished beating the Leafs. Are they going to go into Philly and beat the Flyers? I don't know. Gabe,
I think the Kraken, the Seahawks. Seahawks are going to be the only ones to win tonight, I think, in Seattle. Maybe the Kraken can beat the Flyers, but I think the Mariners will lose to the Blue Jays tonight, and then the Seahawks will win.
Thank you, Gabe. That's what I was thinking, too. 1-2. Let the Seahawks win. The other two lose. That'd be perfect. Actually, I really don't care about the Kraken and Flyers, but Blue Jays, Mariners, yeah. I'm with you, buddy. Let's go.
Kirby got lit up earlier in the series against the Blue Jays. So if you're the Blue Jays, it's a good spot that you're in here right now in that you're hitting 310 against Kirby. So it's not like he shuts you down. You've got a bunch of guys on the team that have hit him, or a few guys. Basically, Vlad hit him and Springer hit him. So Vlad and Springer can sort of set the table early. Bieber's pitched really well this year. I think Bieber's better at home as well. So I think it sets up well. It just, you know, it's sort of the rotation. Like, it's the way that, not the rotation of the pitching, but the way that the series has sort of ended up with the back and forth stuff, that I just think, like, the Blue Jays have the momentum now. And, you know, it's like musical chairs, and, you know, the music's about to stop. Seven games, and I think the Jays are going to have that last chair right now. Early in a baseball game is going to be massive. Like, which pitcher is going to get, you know, if no one gets rattled early. One thing with Seattle, though, I got to remind people about. And when I took Seattle earlier in the series, after the Jays had beat them, thing with Seattle is they're really used to being up against the wall, this team. They played 15 innings of elimination baseball against the Detroit Tigers.
Yep.
And there was runners on second base and third base every damn inning, man. And it would be like nobody out. It'd be like, man, our season could be over in a minute. And they got out of it all the time. Like, they just remained calm. You saw they didn't panic against the Blue Jays. They got the big win when they needed it, when they needed the third home game. They did win. So I do like the Blue Jays tonight, but I'm not going to dismiss the Mariners, because the Mariners really do seem to play. They do well when their back's against the wall. So,
and Gabe,
this is a toss-up, but I think the Blue Jays have the advantage being at home tonight.
Yes, they do have the home advantage, but let's remember one thing, too. They did jump on Bieber until his off-speed stuff started to work. And last night, the Mariners had base runners galore. They just hit into three double plays in back-to-back innings to get Yasevich out of a lot of trouble. He made the pitches when he needed to, and I'm very scared of Seattle. You're right, Gabe. They're one of those relentless teams. Like, if the Blue Jays are up, they're not going to go away. They're very, very battle-tested. Should be a great game.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
The Jays play on emotion, guys. When you think about it, when they're at home, they always play on emotion, whereas Seattle, look at their run, and you're right, Cam. Think about that Detroit series. They've been cool, right? And then think about the games in Toronto. The Mariners were relaxed. They weren't like, they go 3-0, game's tied 3-3. Okay, cool. We'll hit 2-3 run homers. We're up 10-3 at that point, right? So they know how to win on the road. Question now for the Jays, right, is this core that people have envisioned being the franchise foundation pieces, can they now take that next step in their ascension and say, we can win this critical game 7 and go on to the big show and play the Dodgers this week?
Either way, neither team, I don't think, really has a chance against the Dodgers, to be honest with you. Like, I guess you could argue, can they win 2 games? Maybe. You know, would it go 5 games, 6 games? I don't think it would be a sweep. Thing is, too, the Mariners or the Blue Jays would technically, I say home field advantage, and I say that technically, because I don't really think it's an advantage. In a 2-3-2 format, you're better off being the road team. And the Dodgers are going to be the road team either way. So the Dodgers know, man, we win both games on the road. We're going to finish this off at home, or we just got to take 1 game on the road. So I've always been a fan. I've always thought you're better off being the road team. And the other thing, like you said, Mo, with the Blue Jays, it's a little like hockey playoffs, right? The Mariners are a really good home team, and we saw that they got caught up in it where they didn't play well at home. And then the same with the Blue Jays. Right. You look at the Blue Jays early. The stadium was so fired up and stuff. the players get into it, the national anthem and all that. And sometimes there's too much energy and it can backfire on you. And the road team can sort of, you know, ball it up. I think now, though, that we're this deep into the series, the Jays can just sort of ride the momentum of the crowd tonight. But the crowd won't have anything to do with the result. In the end, it'll be the starting pitching. Who's going to hit a early home run to settle things down, to give the team some confidence. But I don't really think, I mean, you can make an argument who has a better chance. I think the Jays kind of have a better chance against the Dodgers than the Mariners do, because I think the Jays' offense has more than Seattle. Mm-hmm. But I also think if you put the Dodgers in the Rogers Center with that short porch, the Dodgers are going to put a million runs on the board. And I think the Dodgers pitching will just shut down these teams. So,
but what about the bullpen up for LA? That's been the question mark, though, Gabe.
They don't use their bullpen, Mo.
I know, that's but the thing. Their starters, to,
that's the whole point. They don't use it because they only give up one damn run a game. That's
what and do. Then when they use their bullpen, it's their starters that they'll use out of the bullpen after. Right? I mean, they put Blake Trinan in with a 5-run lead or whatever. But, like, they're not, you know, honestly, the Dodgers pitchers have gone 6-7 innings in every game except one. In the playoffs. I think there was one where Yamamoto went 4-1 against Philadelphia. That's the only game. It's the thing, guys. Like, they've only lost one game in the playoffs. Once. So now you say, oh, yeah, you're going to beat them 4 times out of 7?
Another problem, Gabe, you know, all their guys are getting better, too. Like, Snell's unstoppable right now. Yeah. You know, it's a plethora of riches. Like, how do you beat the Dodgers?
He's been unstoppable all year. Like, he's been money. But they're 24-6 in their last 30 playoff games.
Yeah. And Shohei hasn't hit well until the closeout game on the weekend.
No, exactly. He's hitting 127. Yeah. Then he hit 3 home runs in one game.
Then he hits up. Yeah, problems.
That's the thing with the Dodgers, though, that makes them so hard, that a lot of teams would be like, yeah, we have Ohtani, but if he's struggling, we're in trouble. Right? Like the Blue, like, you know what I mean? If Vladimir Guerrero struggles and Springer struggles, the Jays are in trouble. Right, like the Dodgers could have, like, Mookie Betts and Ohtani could go 0-27, and Teoscar Hernandez could hit 3 home runs, and Max Muncy, and like Will Smith,
and Kiki Hernandez, the playoff maven.
Yeah, it's like there's like 9 of them. It's whack-a-mole. So it's like, yeah, these two are cold, but these other 4 guys are hot. Right, the pitching though, right? And I don't know, Cam. I mean, you could lose pitching. The Dodgers have been dialed in like no other. Like, this pitching has been an historic run that they've been on during this playoff run. Will the week off hurt them? You never know, right? It's another thing. I mean, baseball teams aren't used to having full 7 days off, and the Dodgers clinched on Friday.
I think they had a practice game tonight during the Jays Mariners matchup as they play that matchup tonight.
Yeah, they have, yeah, exactly. They'll do a few simulated games this week.
The problem is, too, Gabe, both of those guys know the Jays. Snell, when he pitched for Tampa Bay, and Glasnow for the Rays, too. Like, they've seen these guys a lot. Like, I don't know, man. Like, I just look at the Dodgers and go, like, you need a bloody miracle to beat this team. It's crazy.
Like I said, I think the Dodgers will win. If they play the Jays, I'll say 6. I'll give the Jays 2 games. If it's the Mariners, I'll say 5, but 5 or 6. I think that's how it's going to play out. All right, NHL hockey. So the NHL season kind of flying under the radar a little bit right now because, you know, everything, playoffs and, you know, everything's been going on. But I tell you what, it's been a nice road trip for the Vancouver Canucks. And I've talked about this for years, about the negative Canuck fans and they're losers, for lack of a better term. Like, they are. They're just a bunch of losers. They're a bunch of whiny bitches. They were complaining after one game, after 2 games. Kane sucks. Pedersen sucks. Blah, blah. Adam Foote doesn't know what he's doing. Whatever. You think it's a coincidence that they do better on the road all the time, guys? Like, seriously, they go on the road and they go 3-0 on the road, right? Like, against, you know, pretty good teams, too. So the Canucks are just, you know, stringing this thing together right now. They beat the Washington Capitals. They beat the Chicago Blackhawks. They beat the Dallas Stars. All on the road. They got one more road game coming up here. And then, Mo, incidentally, they host the Montreal Canadiens later in the weekend. In my 5, nearly 6 years, I guess it's 5 and a half now. Was it with 2025? 5, yeah. I don't know. Yeah, 5 years. So I've been here 5 years, and there was the COVID stuff. So there wasn't home fans sometimes, and, you know, we went through all that type of stuff. But the Montreal, I've never seen the Canadians play here before. The Canadians had never played on a Saturday here.
It's been a while.
Yeah, they've always played on a Tuesday or a Monday. They never got the hockey. You know, it was a Hockey Night in Canada. So they never get the Hockey Night in Canada. The Leafs always do. Like, the Leafs are here. I think it's New Year's Day or January. Yeah, I guess the 31st or whatever. Like, the Leafs and the Canucks are always a Hockey Night in Canada game. The Canadians have not been. Like, they play on a Sunday night or a Tuesday here or whatnot. So it's they're playing at 7 o'clock Eastern, 4 o'clock Vancouver time this Saturday, in Vancouver. I'm going to go to the game. What's the feeling about the Canadian start to the season in Montreal?
Well, you know, Gabe, excitement, no question about that. This is a much better start than in years past, where they'd be like 1-5, and people are like, oh boy, here we go again. But even with the loss to the Rangers, the law of averages played out for them. Because remember, they won at the death against Nashville. They won late against Seattle. Chicago, it was 2-2 until late in that game when they beat the Blackhawks. So really, for them now, you know, they get the Buffalo Sabres tonight, and I think Dobish will be in nets tonight against the Sabres. We'll find out now, guys. Think about it. From here to the end of October, they got the West Coast trip playing Calgary, Edmonton, and Seattle included, and Vancouver as well. We'll find out if they're going to be a team that can weather this type of storm, because whenever they go out to Western Canada or the West Coast, they always come up average or below average. And now for Martin St-Louis and what he's built up right now, we'll see what they can do. Kirby Dach, he's been banged up, and he might be on a load management schedule for moving on here as it is. They don't got Goulet in the lineup as well because he's out for the next 4 or 5 weeks. So the tests will be there for the Canadians, guys. The question now is, can this young core take that next step in their ascension, like the Jays are right now, and say, you know what, we can bang with the best teams out there, and we'll get a good test when we go out to Calgary, Vancouver, Edmonton, Seattle in the next week and a half.
You're right. The Canadians historically do sort of struggle on the West Coast of Canada. They host the Sabres tonight. And then Wednesday night, they're in Calgary. Thursday night, they're in Edmonton. Saturday, they're in Vancouver. Tuesday. So the games are spread out for them, at least. They don't go back-to-back. They go back-to-back once just with the Calgary and the Edmonton trip. Seattle, surprisingly, are undefeated so far in regulation this year. So, yeah, Montreal Canadiens and the Vancouver Canucks on Saturday. We look forward to seeing that. I haven't seen a Canuck game yet this year. Can the Toronto Maple Leafs, you know, they're playing okay. Sort of, it's, you know, too early to really fully judge these teams, but, you know, what are they, 3-2-2 to start the season? So they're sort of playing .500 hockey.
I got to be honest with you. I'm not happy at all. It's just one of those things. Yeah, so you lose, but look, okay, you beat the Canadiens. Sure, you get up for that game, but take a look at their games, though, Gabe. Like, in the way they give up, like, they give up 4 goals to Nashville, is one of the worst teams. They've absolutely got smoked by the Red Wings. Like, the Red Wings have taken them out to the woodshed. They lost to the Seattle Kraken over the weekend as a -200 favorite. I actually like the Kraken in that spot. I'm just telling you for what it is, Gabe. And Mo could agree. I think there's a lot more to be happy for, I think, with Montreal moving forward. The Leafs are just kind of one of those teams stuck in quicksand. They still have a lot of issues defensively, and you know, it's up to some of these guys are going to have to step up. It's very early. I'm not like these crazy Canuck fans, but you know what I mean, though, Gabe? Like, yeah. Like Detroit's beating them on back-to-backs. You're losing to Seattle. You're getting outplayed by the Rangers. You find a way. I just haven't been impressed with their team. Let's put it that way. Meh. That's what I talk about the Leafs. Meh.
Meanwhile,
not good enough.
Mitch Marner's Las Vegas Golden Knights, 4-0-2 on the season.
Yeah, exactly.
Enjoying life in Vegas.
Yeah, good goal, Mitch. Yeah, he's smart. He can get away from this this franchise. But who do they play? They play Carolina. Carolina hasn't lost a game. What a game. Carolina and Vegas. That's hockey.
Mitch Marner is lighting it up, for the record, too. He's got 2 goals and 6 assists in 6 games.
Yep, of course he does. He left Toronto.
Cam, to your point about Detroit, think about this, though. They're 5-1, right? They got skunked by the Habs game 1, and people thought Detroit was all done and over, right?
Yeah, but they look
good. Detroit looks good. So even the loss to Detroit, you know, you're right, Cam. I wouldn't overanalyze this, say, oh, the Leafs are done. I think it's going to be a slow start for them, and they want to build towards March, April, going towards May if they get that far in the playoffs.
Yeah, you guys might be right, too. Like, there's going to be lulls in the season because of their playoff, you know, disappointments. Like, they have to have everybody, you know, healthy, ready to go and stuff like that. They're going to sleepwalk through some games against some lesser light teams. But I'm just saying, though, when you look at some other teams on the up and up, like, I just wish the Leafs had a little bit more. That's the whole thing. I just, I have kind of given up. I think their window of opportunity was there. So I'll take Gabe. I'm going to try to stay positive, but I don't expect too much from these guys.
Now, you know what? For me, the Leafs, I'm going to say that it's early in the season and they're trying to find an identity, right? They're a different team right now. They're playing a different style. They're changing. They're in transformation. Mm-hmm. So, well, let's see what the fans like looking at a cake in the oven after 10 minutes. It's like, let's check in a month and see like where this team is. And, you know, like I said, I think they're just still trying to find an identity right now and a new style. They've got a bunch of new players on the team. So, you know, I don't think it's not good. It's not bad. It's just sort of right there, but they got to be careful, right? Even like, you know, even like Vancouver, I was saying Vancouver off to this nice little start here, but it's a bitch. You got Vegas in your division, right? The Kraken are winning games. Like, there's a lot of good teams in the West, and there's good teams in the East, too. Like, these games count. So before we get out of here, I was shocked by this, guys, looking at the playoff picture in the National Football League. So, Mo, if the playoffs start today, the Indianapolis Colts are the one seed and would have a bye. We all predicted that, right?
Of course you did.
One thing, though, you look at this playoff picture right now, and the Chiefs aren't in it, but you know they're going to be. This team is obviously back, and we got to get to that. That might have been my worst pick. I didn't go crazy yesterday in the NFL, but I actually bet on the Raiders, guys. And I was like, the Raiders often play the Chiefs tough. The Chiefs, like, stumble against them often. I said, maybe this is a game where the Raiders just show up, and it's kind of, you know, oh, God, no. Was I ever wrong about that? But what is that? Like, number one, the Chiefs are back. People failed to take advantage of it earlier in the season when they had all the injuries, and now they're just going to get healthier and everyone back from the suspension, and they're going to win football games. And then the Raiders, like, dear God, like, it's just getting worse, Mo. No. Like, you know what I mean? What are you doing with Geno Smith as your quarterback? You should have a young quarterback. You're not going to win. The Raider organization just never figures it out, like, how to rebuild.
You know, you made a good point earlier. I think it was you or Cam that brought up Will Howard. Will Howard got Chip Kelly paid to be the OC for the Raiders. Let's put it that way, okay? Let's not kid ourselves. I think this Raider team, you're right, Gabe. They just stumble and bumble the way through. But I think deep down, they knew that this was not going to be a season where they would go 10-7. I know Pete Carroll was about the rah-rah. We're going to be competitive. They were deficient, guys. And it's finally caught up to them from the past regimes of Gruden, Mayock, Telesco, Pearson, McDaniels, and Ziegler. And now they're paying for it. But the thing is, if you're a Raider fan, you can be optimistic because they'll have about $102 million of cap space to work with next year, boatload of draft picks to work with. And they got to find that quarterback. And I think they got to find an O-line. And that's been the downfall for this team is that they have no O-line, and they've been exposed by better defensive lines out there that has made things difficult for Geno Smith and the run game to work with. Guys, you know very well, if you don't have an O-line, you're not doing anything in the NFL.
Raiders have big, big problems right now. Yeah, they've got some pieces, but they're going to have to get it right at the draft table moving forward. That's my thing. The Raiders just don't have enough young talent, like enough good talent. Right? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But, you know, we got Brock Bowers, but
he's hurt.
They don't have enough young talent spread across the roster just to sort of grow with. All right, we'll wrap it up with the CFL. And Ottawa's at Hamilton, so it sets up well for Hamilton to be able to nail down the win. Montreal's at Winnipeg, so it looks like it's a tougher spot. Hamilton probably wins the division, Mo.
I would give, you know what, I do agree. I think Hamilton does win the division, but I think Ottawa will give them fits on Friday when they play each other. I know Montreal's going to wait for that game to play out before they decide to play anyone. If it's up for grabs, you'll see the first teamers from Montreal play. But I think for Hamilton guys right now, and Cam and Gabe, you guys are diehard CFL guys, I'm taking Montreal. If you have to pick a team right now from the East to go to the Grey Cup, I think Montreal can do it. If they get past the crossover team, they'll beat Hamilton, and they'll be in Winnipeg for Grey Cup in a month's time from now. So I think Hamilton's got more question marks than what Montreal has right now going to the final week of the year of the season and, of course, towards the playoffs next week.
No, I agree. I think the Alouettes are the team to beat. I think the Alouettes are going to the Grey Cup, and I think it's going to be against the BC Lions. It's going to be – it's either Saskatchewan or BC. But Saskatchewan haven't looked great. Even though I told people the other night, I said, you know, they're going to cover against Winnipeg. Winnipeg.
Yeah, we're on a game. Oh, free money. Everybody's out. They don't care. I love that angle. It's like, what? What are you talking about? Yeah, Gabe, like, that was the one thing we were talking about, Saskatchewan. They almost win the damn game, and you're getting points with these guys? Like, I'm with you, Gabe. I think BC, that's the play, buddy. This team, they can go into the playoffs with that offense and do, like, they can slay teams. Their defense is getting better, as we talked about. They're winning. I think BC and Montreal are the two best teams right now. That's my Grey Cup too.
And that would be a rematch from the 2006 Grey Cup in Winnipeg when BC beat Montreal.
Ooh, interesting.
Drummond and Millington.
Dave Dickinson. Drummond and Millington was 2000 when they won in Calgary against the Alouettes.
Sean Millington.
Already, I was thinking about that one the other
great
day.
Great Canadian.
Yeah. BC are at Saskatchewan, and Saskatchewan obviously won't be starting their starters, but they're still competitive, but BC should be able to grind out a win. BC win that game, and they'll host a playoff game.
They need to host that game. They have to host that game.
And then if they host a playoff game, they can win the playoff game, and then they can go on the road. They'll have to beat Saskatchewan. Like, that's the bottom line. All right, good job, Mo, Cam. We'll catch up with Mo next week. We'll see you tomorrow, Cam. Good luck to your Blue Jays tonight. I do think the Blue Jays are going to win tonight.
I hope so, buddy. We'll see what happens, see how long Bieber can go, but it's going to be a classic. The Mariners, these guys are fighters. Go Blue Jays.
Yeah, it's a game seven. Anything can happen. But
yeah.
but I think the Blue Jays win. And Mo, your prediction for the NFL games tonight?
Like I said, I agree with Cam on the Lions game right now. And I think the Seahawks do win, but it'll be like a 3-4 point win at best. Yeah, a very close game. Low scoring, though.
Right, so Cam and Mo are on the Lions and Seahawks. I'm going to take the Buccaneers plus the 6, and I'll be on the Seahawks tonight as well. All right, subscribe to the podcast so you get alerted when the show gets dropped on a daily basis. We appreciate you tuning in. We appreciate Cam and Mo joining us. Other than that, you're on your own. Later.